The Wall Street Wrap-Up, weekday afternoons at 4:50 on the Hill Country Patriot.
There is nothing wrong with your radio. Do not attempt to change the station. We are controlling transmission. If we wish to make it louder, we will bring up the volume. If we wish to make it softer, we will bring it to a whisper. For the next hour, sit quietly and we shall control all that you hear. You are about to participate in a great adventure. You are about to experience the awe and mystery which reaches from the inner mind to the outer limits.
And now, it's time for the radio show that covers just about every topic. Because variety is the spice of life. From the arcane and unusual to current events and practical tips. Because if it's interesting, they'll be talking about it. And now, here's Bill and Allison Mancaro.
Thank you, Harley and Bob, for that intro.
Yeah. And we are Bill and Allison. We're sometimes wrong.
But we're always right.
And getting a rather odd start to this. Well, we're a little rusty. We've been away for a couple of weeks.
We've been out of town for two and a half weeks.
My point is we're getting a little rusty.
I know.
And we have to get back in the groove. We are never PC, by the way, politically correct. We're proudly politically incorrect. P.I.
Right.
I forgot what I am. Most importantly, we strive to be B.C.,
biblically correct.
Absolutely. I'm a native Texan. Allison is a Native American.
I am.
In more than one way. you're an Indian as well, American.
That's right. I'm a Native
American.
Chickasaw Indian.
Here's our trigger warning. Allison and I identify as non-binary. Non-binary, just to let you know. Well, we like to begin our program with a little verse from the Bible, short verse. This is from the book of Ephesians. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. Jonathan Edwards, a great American colonial period theologian, said, God has appointed this whole life to be all as a race or a battle, the state of rest wherein we shall so be out of danger as to have no need of watching and fighting is for another world. Jonathan. Many people think Jonathan Edwards is the greatest American theologian ever. Well, it was nice and cool this morning, and we're going to be talking about, by the way, we are going to be talking a little more about what that verse means applied to events of today. That'll be coming up a little later in the program. This day in history, in 1989, Congressman Mickey Leland's plane, and Congressman Leland was from the Houston area, his plane crashed in Ethiopia. He was originally from Lubbock. He worked in Houston as a pharmacist, and he was elected in 78. He started in 79. Vacated by Barbara Jordan, and served more than 10 years in the U.S. Congress. He chaired the Congressional Black Caucus, and he went to the Sudan in the spring of 1989, trying to aid Sudanese refugees in Ethiopia on his sixth trip to Africa. His plane crashed on the way to a refugee camp.
What, weren't there some conspiracy theories about that?
There were, yeah, and I don't remember them all, but there were some conspiracy theories. I don't know why you want to kill Mickey Leland. I have no idea. He was a very nice guy. When I worked in Congress, his office was just down the hall, and so we'd see each other quite frequently, and very pleasant, very, even though we were totally opposite on the ideological scale, the political ideological scale, we both got on very well, and he was very nice guy. And Terminal D at Houston Intercontinental Airport was named in Mickey Leland's honor.
Mm-hmm. How many times do you want to point out does that happen around the United States?
Naming a airline terminal after someone who died in an airplane crash, I've always thought was a little odd.
That's, that's happened. Let's see, in Oklahoma City, it's...
Wiley Post.
Is it Wiley Post?
Wiley Post. No, it's not Wiley Post. That's another airport.
Will Rogers?
Will Rogers Airport, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Who died in a plane crash.
Right. Alaska?
Alaska, I believe it's Wiley Post Airport.
Okay.
He was Amelia Earhart's navigator. I don't know where that, maybe not Alaska, but I don't know where that is. And there are a couple other examples of that. Naming a airport after someone who died in a plane crash. Yeah, that's good thinking.
Who came up with that idea?
And by the way, why do they call them airport terminals? That's a little scary, isn't it?
I know.
Yeah, I know too. Well, another event in history this week was the birthday of Billy Joe Shaver. And Billy Joe was an American country singer and very prominent and progressive.
Outlaw country.
Outlaw country. And this... we're going to play a little bit of one of his songs. It was hard to pick which one as a tribute. I'll tell you a little bit about him before we play the song. He took a job as a lumber mill, at a lumber mill, to make ends meet. And one day his right hand, and he was right-handed, became caught in the machinery, and he lost the better part of two fingers, plus contracted a serious infection. He eventually recovered. He taught himself to play the guitar, without those missing fingers. And he's been accompanied by other major rock and country music musicians such as Willie Nelson, Charlie Daniels, George Strait, and many others. And he was in several Robert Duvall films. Some tragedy in his life, after losing his wife Brenda and his mother to cancer in the same year, 1999, Billy Joe lost his son and longtime guitarist Eddie, who died at age 38 on December 31, 2000. That's a little bit of background on Billy Joe Shaver. He's in the Texas Country Music Hall of Fame.
He was born in Corsicana.
Born in Corsicana.
Died in Waco.
Lived in Waco. So here is, I said, Alice and I labored over which one. I mean, there's so many great Billy Joe Shaver songs. I think you'll find this both interesting, enjoyable, and kind of funny.
I was on a bus one time. Somebody sneezed. It was out in California. I said, "God bless you." And they kind of got ruffled up about it. I said, "Okay, may the God of your choice bless you." And I'd like to say today that I love the Lord Jesus Christ, and that's where I'm at. I mean, everybody's,
amen.
You know, you can do your own thing, but that's what I do. I'm a sinner big time.
It's a pretty good deal, actually.
It ain't bad.
I go for that.
If you don't love Jesus, go to hell. If you don't love Jesus, go to hell. Take your rotten rags of righteousness and stuff them up yourself. If you don't love Jesus, go to hell. Ain't no way to cover up your sin. You wolves in sheep's clothing won't get in. If you're free as a breeze or locked up in a cell. If you don't love Jesus, go to hell. My ass. Better move your foot mighty fast. I got Holy Ghost power and I'll really ring your bell. If you don't love Jesus, go to hell. Getting left if you don't love Jesus, go to hell. If you don't love Jesus, go to hell. If you don't love Jesus, go to hell. Take your rotten rags of righteousness and stuff them up yourself. If you don't love Jesus, go to hell. And stuff them up yourself. If you don't love Jesus, go to hell.
Bill, I don't know if you mentioned at the top of this story, but the reason we're playing Billy Joe Shaver is his birthday was just this past August 16th.
That's correct. It was. And, of course, there's another great significance to, August 15th.
That's Bill's birthday.
Indeed. And August 10th.
That's my birthday.
That's Allison's birthday. But that was Billy Joe Shaver, who, very much unappreciated man. And we'll be talking a little more about him in the second hour. And we've got another song that I think you'll like. A tribute to Billy Joe Shaver by none other than the Hill Country treasurer.
King Keith Friedman.
That's right. Well, what you got, Allison? Well, I know you're ready to talk.
Well, you're talking about...
What an unusual circumstance.
Stop it. Well, you're talking about anniversaries. We just missed. Yesterday was August 18th. Was National Pinot Noir Day.
Pinot Noir, that's a wine, right?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
So did you drink lots of it yesterday?
No, didn't drink it. I should have.
Well, you should have. Okay, tomorrow, August 20th, is World Mosquito Day. And also tomorrow, and actually, you know, people probably assume that we have lots of mosquitoes here, but we're in Kerrville, rarely see mosquitoes.
In Kill Country mostly, yeah.
Yeah, but apparently Houston has tons of them.
Well, they have humidity.
And large ones. But yeah. We have very low humidity, so we really don't have many mosquitoes. Mm-hmm. Also, tomorrow is August 20th, is National Chocolate Pecan Pie Day. And most importantly, tomorrow, August 20th, is National Radio Day.
Oh, National Radio Day.
How about that?
Yeah. Well, we'll be celebrating it here at the Hill Country Patriot, your information station.
That's right.
Well, how about that? Well, speaking of events and such, during our second hour, we're going to be talking about all the events going on in Hill Country that you need to know about. Bring your family and all the things that are fun to do. That'll be right after the news at the top of the hour at 9 o'clock.
Okay.
Well, in the news, speaking of the news, Billy Bush, the heir to the Anheuser-Busch company, has offered to buy the company back from its parent company. Anheuser-Busch sold to InBev, company InBev, I-N-B-E-V, in 2008. And
it's a foreign country.
Brazilian company. It's a Brazilian company, yeah. By the way, that does remind me of a joke. And I don't often tell straight-out jokes, but I understand that an aide to Joe Biden came in and in the morning and said, Mr. President, I have some horrible news. And Biden says, what is it? And he says, well, overnight, there were 6 Brazilian soldiers killed. And Biden goes, oh, my God, 6 Brazilian soldiers? Yes, sir. How many is a Brazilian? We need to have some little hotkey to laughter. Because when you're in radio, you're basically sitting talking to the wall. You know, you're talking to people. You're talking to people, but it feels like you don't get any response. You know?
Exactly.
So, anyway, Billy Bush wants to buy back Anheuser-Busch Company. From InBev, B-E-V. And he says, I think InBev doesn't understand who their core drinker is. Of course, Anheuser-Busch is the parent company of Bud Light, that put that twerp on the can. He says
transgender man.
Oh, I'm sorry, excuse me.
Pretending to be a woman.
Yeah. So Billy said, I don't think they understand who their core drinker is. InBev is a Brazilian-based company that really doesn't live here or understand America. Billy spoke of his ancestors who founded Anheuser-Busch and the bond they shared with customers. He said, quote, they knew who their drinkers were. They were with the bar owners and the restaurant owners and the liquor store owners and talking to these people day in and day out. Quote, even my dad at 89 years old, 90 years old, he was still going to the bars selling Budweiser back in those days in the 80s. Is that what he told you, Billy? Anyway, Billy Bush said, I urge that company, InBev, if they don't want that brand any longer, sell it back to the Bush family. Sell it to me. I'll be first in line to buy that brand back from you, and we'll make that brand great again. He wants to make Anheuser-Busch great again. He said, I think my family, my ancestors, would have rolled over in their graves. They believe that transgender, gays, that sort of thing was a personal issue, but it was never meant to be on a beer can and never meant to be pushed in people's faces. Going on with what Billy Bush said, you know, I think people who drink beer, I think they're your common folk. I think they're the blue-collar worker who goes and works hard every single day. The last thing they want pushed down their throat or to be drinking is a beer can with that kind of message on it. I just don't think that's what they're looking for. They want their beer to be truly American, truly patriotic, as it always has been, truly America's beer, which Bud Light was and probably isn't any longer. Well, we never drank Bud Light because I like to drink, when I have beer, which is not very often, I like to drink real beer, not the beer-flavored water. But,
And we were just past a couple weeks someplace that makes good beer.
That's right. That's right.
Which we'll be talking about more later.
We'll be talking about that a little later. And we switched to Yuengling, Yuengling, something like that.
Yuengling, Yuengling.
Yuengling. And it's very good, and it's made in America, in Pennsylvania, by it's America's oldest brewery, and the family-owned. It's not owned by some big corporation. It's all family-owned, and the owner is a big Trump supporter and contributor. So I thought that was very interesting. But, you know, here's a little clip that Allison and I found that about this Bud Light stuff and trans stuff that I thought you'd enjoy.
When I grow up, I want to work for a woke company, like super woke.
When I grow up, I want to be hired based on what I look like
rather than my skills.
I want to be judged
by my political beliefs.
I want to get promoted
based on my chromosomes.
When I grow up, I want to be offended
by my coworkers
and walk around the office
on eggshells
and have my words policed
by HR.
Words like grandfather,
peanut gallery,
long time no see,
no can do.
When I grow up,
I want to be obsessed with emotional safety
and do workplace sensitivity training
all day long.
I want to be a conformist.
I want to weaponize my pronouns. What are pronouns?
It's time to grow up and get back to work. Introducing the number one woke-free job board in America, redballoon.work.
Bring me sunshine in your smile. Make me happy all the while. In this world where we live, there should be more.
We'll be right back.
Those are the Jive Aces. JiveAces.org. If you want to check them out, or on YouTube.
We were just with them
just
this
with
past,
them past
week.
Week. When we come back, we're going to talk about parents whose kids skip school can now be jailed. You don't want to miss that story. We'll be right back after a quick break. Never bring me. Welcome back to the Bill and Allison Show on the Hill Country Patriot, your information station. We got some breaking news for you. Parents whose kids skip school can now be jailed. The good news is it's not in Texas. Not yet. Not yet. But in Missouri,
Well, honestly, I don't know if that's such a bad thing.
Yeah, well, maybe so. Maybe so.
I mean, parents should be responsible for their kids.
That's true. That's true.
Getting them educated.
No, kids are responsible for themselves, like determining their own gender. Don't right. you know that, Elsa?
Right.
Oh, God. Good point.
But Missouri parents can expect to be jailed if their children miss school. A court ordered prison terms for two mothers whose young children missed 2 weeks over the course of a year. Their appeal was, the mothers were from put behind bars for not ensuring what they called regular attendance by their 6 and 7-year-old children. Their appeal was dismissed on Tuesday, this past Tuesday, by the Missouri Supreme Court. It insisted that the state did not have to define what regular means.
Well, first of all, we're talking about 6 and 7-year-olds, mm-hmm. that they should not be allowed to do whatever they want.
That's right.
I mean, their parents should put them in school.
That's
and if they are there, okay. I will admit, when I was in high school, I would skip out a day or two.
Well, you should have been imprisoned, obviously.
but I was almost an adult. I was a teenager. Mm-hmm. I was not 6 or 7. I think that's outrageous.
That's the problem with parents
allow their kids to do that,
and then they grow up and do all sorts of bad things because they get no supervision from their parents.
Exactly.
But the mothers were prosecuted by the school district because it demands an attendance rate of at least 90%. One mother was sentenced to 13 days, and the other was jailed for 7 days.
It mentions mothers. I assume there are no fathers in the picture.
They didn't mention that, did they? Mm-hmm. Nearly 600 charges have been filed by Missouri state officials for violations of compulsory education law in the last 5 years. Well, maybe, it's school is rapidly approaching. I mean, they go to school early, much earlier here than I did as a kid.
I think here in Texas, they're probably already in school.
Could be. I haven't looked it up.
Yeah, when I was a kid, we didn't go back to school until after Labor Day.
Mm-hmm. Exactly right. Well, if you're thinking about homeschooling, or maybe you have homeschooled, but this might help you out either way. First of all, ask yourself, if you did it last year, what worked? What worked? Write down what worked last year, and do it again. On the flip side, what didn't work? What didn't go well last year? Did your children struggle with a certain subject, or were certain routines more draining to them? Would they get bored? Did you get into a rut at any point last year? So make a list of what didn't work. And figure out why they weren't ideal and make some adjustments. Ask yourself, what are your children's strengths? Every child is different. And one of the best advantages of homeschooling, among the many advantages, is the ability to cater to the specific needs of each child and allow each to reach their own potential. So focus on their strengths. And what are their interests? Find out what they're interested in. Engage in the subject or activity with them, and that'll be fun, and it'll help them as well. Another question to ask yourself is, what are your goals in homeschooling? Think about what you want to accomplish. What experiences and lessons do you want to put into your homeschooling? What would make you feel like your homeschool year was a success? And finally, a big question: why are you homeschooling? Why did you make the choice to homeschool in the first place, if you have? And why is that the best option for each of your children and your family as a whole? Maybe you have new reasons for homeschooling. So those are some things to think about, some timely things to think about, and about homeschooling, that time of year. Well, we were away. We played a best of Bill and Allison when we were gone, and we had some fun. And we're going to be talking about that a little later in the show.
Mm-hmm.
Some pretty interesting experiences,
we did.
I must say.
We did have some very interesting experiences.
Yes, we did. What have we got here? Oh, there's so much to cover. So much has happened in the last couple of weeks that we haven't been able to talk about.
I know.
And maybe you do or do not know about this about the Biden family. And I've got to give Allison some technical advice here. It's second row from the bottom on the right.
When I'm
running the board, I don't have to do that.
Okay.
Allison's our engineer here. Anyway, some things you might not know about the Bidens. Joe Biden was married to a woman named Nelia. They had three children, Hunter, Beau, and Naomi. In 1972, very tragically, his wife Nelia and their little girl Naomi died in an automobile accident in Delaware. And when I remember reading about when he had just been elected to the U.S. Senate, and the majority leader of the Senate at the time, I think it was Mike Mansfield, kept him very, very busy. Just piled work on him, assigned him to all sorts of committees, just to help keep his mind off of it. But anyway, Joe eventually married Jill, who was current wife.
Dr. Jill.
Remember one of those twits on The View when Biden was elected president? They said, well, I think that
she should be Surgeon General.
Yes, the Surgeon General. She thought she should call herself doctor. She must be a physician, uh-huh. Right? An MD. No, she has a PhD in education
education.
I think in clay modeling or something like that.
Something very close to that.
Yeah, the history of arithmetic.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. But anyway, Joe, this is the shocker. Joe Biden already knew Jill, his current wife. You know why? Because she'd been his son Hunter's babysitter. Hunter's babysitter. Joe and Jill had got married.
Actually, wasn't she married when they first started dating?
That I don't know.
I do believe that's
well, no,
correct.
She wasn't, because she was 15 years old when they first started dating, and he was in his 30s. And I have a picture here. It's a very well-suppressed photo. It took a long time for us, Alice and I, to find it, and I wish I could hold it up in the microphone so you could see it. But it's a Joe Biden in his 30s, I guess, sitting outside in a lawn chair, and he's got Jill, 15 years old, sitting on his lap, and his arms are around her waist, and they're posing for the camera. Have you seen that picture also?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is it normal to hug up on your 15-year-old babysitter?
Well, mm-hmm. I babysat a whole lot, and let me tell you, none of the fathers ever hugged up on me.
Yeah. Well, Jill and Joe have a daughter named Ashley. And you may have heard of her diary, where she talks about her drug addictions, and she's frequently in and out of rehab. And sadly, Beau died in 2015 from a brain tumor. He had been married to a woman named Hallie. Well, enter Hunter Biden. When Beau died, not long after, same year, he comforted his brother's widow, Hallie. And mind you, Hunter at that time is married to Kathleen since 1993. Now we're talking about 2015. So he starts an affair with his dead brother's wife the same year his brother died. And Hunter's wife, Kathleen, found out about it. They separated. And then Hunter moved in with his dead brother's wife, Hallie, and her two kids. Hunter ultimately got divorced from Kathleen in 2017. But before that happened, while he was still married, it's hard to keep his name straight, Kathleen, while he was still married, just separated, having an affair with Hallie, then he got a divorce. But before the divorce from Kathleen, are you following this? Hunter started an affair with a stripper while still shacking up with his dead brother's wife before his divorce was finalized, and he gets the stripper pregnant. So, remember, at this point, he's still legally married to his first wife, living with his sister-in-law, and has a baby with a stripper, as you do. You following this? Can you imagine, Allison, if that was one of Trump's sons?
Oh, yeah.
So somewhere there's a little girl whose mommy is a stripper, her daddy's a crackhead, and her grandfather is the president of the United States. Now, Hunter has denied over and over again that the stripper's baby is hid, but a paternity test proved otherwise. And eventually Hunter married yet another woman named Melissa in 2019 after knowing her for all of 6 days. And if you don't believe all this, go to Google or go online, excuse me, and just type in Hunter Biden's wives and girlfriends. But we're not quite done. This just sets the stage. Enter the laptop from hell. Remember that one?
Hunter, sure.
Yeah. Hunter Biden dropped his laptop off in Delaware, his home state, to get it repaired. He apparently had dropped it in some water in a meth-induced, high on meth, I guess. And then he neglected to pay the $85 repair fee, and the laptop legally became the repair shop's owner's property. When the owner saw what was on it, emails, text messages showing Joe Biden is crooked, photos, child pornography, drug use, he was so disturbed that he contacted the FBI. Got no response. And he contacted the Department of Justice. No response. Because it didn't involve Trump's tax returns or secret documents, I guess. Eventually, he gave it to Rudy Giuliani, and Rudy turned it over to the Delaware State Police after smartly making 4 copies of the hard drive. So there's, I said, child porn is on it. A lot of it involving Hunter's, taking underage children. Hunter taking underage children to China many times. So the Chinese Communist Party uses this as a blackmail tactic. They supply the young girls, they film you unknowingly, then they can keep you in their pocket while paying you lots of money to do their bidding, like lucrative deals with your VP father, the big guy, as he's referred to in the emails. So millions of dollars were paid to Hunter Biden for favors with the U.S. government because he is the vice president's son, now the president's son, while Joe was vice president under Obama. So for 8 years, Hunter made the contacts. He split the money with his father, which is referred to as the big guy in all the emails, detailing how the money be split up among all the criminals involved. So Joe Biden sold out his country, and he used his meth head son to do it. You know, Joe Biden is probably the crookedest president we've ever had, at least in modern times. I think probably historically ever. Is it all going to come to roost? We don't know. We don't know.
And we're going to have more about that story right after a quick break.
We're a little rusty because we've been away for 2 weeks.
On vacation for 2 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. We had a fabulous time. We'll be talking about that in the second hour, I believe. Am I right, Allison?
I believe so.
Okay. Well, a little more on Joe, Uncle Joe Biden. Actually, this is about his daughter, Ashley. Now, it's interesting that before the break, we mentioned that Hunter Biden left by, you know, his laptop for repair and never went and picked it up, and that's how we know all how corrupt Joe Biden is, pretty much. Well, Ashley, who is Joe and Jill Biden's daughter, is a drug addict. She left her personal diary under a mattress in a Palm Beach, Florida halfway house. And the diary details, you can get online. It's been printed online, by the way. I found that out this week. The diary details her drug abuse, her sex addiction, and what she said she was hypersexualized. And one
well,
was...
Well, do you want to say why she was hypersexualized?
Well, I am about to. She recounts times she showered with her father when she was a young girl. And she doesn't say how young. However, she blames her that for being helping to get her hypersexualized.
Didn't she say that happened like into her teens?
I couldn't find where that. I didn't read the whole diary.
Okay, I mean it's one thing if your father showers with you, and you know, and you're a girl, and you're 3 years old.
But, yeah, but I don't think that's great either. But she said in her diary, quote, I remember having sex with friends at a young age, showers with my dad, probably not appropriate. And she believes in her diary that his showering with her could have helped create her sex addiction. We've all heard and seen the videos, I think, that Joe Biden has inappropriately touched women and little kids, smelling little kids' hair. And the other day he said to a bunch of little kids, he said, well, I know some good ice cream places. Just hang around and we'll go out and get some ice cream. I mean, creepy, creepy, creepy. And there's a Nevada State Assemblywoman, Lucy Flores, and she has accused Joe Biden of inappropriately touching her. And Tara Reid, who was on his U.S. Senate staff, says that Joe Biden sexually assaulted her in 1993. So that's that. And before we went to the break, that's a little more on what a creepy, crooked guy we have, and unfortunately, as the President of the United States. A creepy, creepy guy.
Come on, man. Come and listen to my story about a man named Joe, a poor Scranton kid who was always kind of slow. Then one day he was fresh out of school, went up through the ranks, come a bumbling fool.
I think I probably have a much higher IQ than you do.
Someday I gotta have a long talk with that boy.
Well, the first thing you know, Joe's out of the sticks. His kinfolk said, get into politics. He won the Senate race back in Wilmington. So he loaded up the car, made his way to Washington.
Crooked politicians, corrupt lobbyists, as far as the eye could see, made Joe feel right at home.
Come on, man, he's got nowhere to go. Just a flash in the pan, little nothing to show. Come on, man, he never even seems to know.
Come on, man,
it's the same.
You cannot go to a 7-Eleven or a Dunkin' Donuts unless you have a slight Indian accent.
We choose truth over facts.
Now, most people knew that Joe was never the sharpest knife in the drawer. Even in his prime, he never had a fastball. Not even sure he ever had a slow ball.
Now the next thing you know, Joe runs for president, campaigning and hiding in his own basement. After 47 years of living off the folk, claimed he was the common man, became a common joke.
You big dummy!
Like many Capitol hillbillies, Joe leached off the system, signing the back of checks, never the front.
Come on, man, he's got nothing to say, hoping everyone just looks the other way. Come on, man, his fortune always seems to grow.
Come on, man.
It's the sleepy, creepy, sneezy, crazy, good old Uncle Joe.
Poor kids are just as bright and just as talented as white kids.
A three-letter word. Jobs. J-O-B-S. Jobs.
Joe also invented some new words, much to the amazement of his former boss.
For people that bad and kept care, true and international suffers to pressure. True and international suffers to pressure.
Come on, man.
You can't fix stupid. Stupid is forever.
I want to be clear. I'm not going nuts.
What am I doing here? Los Angeles what am I doing here? America is a nation that can be defined in a single word. I was going to put him... The best way to get something done, if it holds near and dear to you, that you like to be able to... Anyway. From Charlotte, another line going from in Florida... down to Tampa.
Of Putin's kleptocracy. Yeah.
We haven't been able to communicate it in a way that is, let me say another way. But the nature, not a solid meeting they make a very good point. Here's the deal. Here's what drives the driver in the states that are affected. Here's what you can do, the drivers.
We want to expand pre-K for 3 and 4 year olds, millions of pre-K kids. And to get hot, I got hairy legs that turn blonde in the sun. And the kids used to come up and reach in the pool and rub my leg down
So it was trained, and then watch the hair come back up again. They look at it. So I learned about roaches. I learned about kids jumping on my lap. And I've loved kids jumping on my lap.
You're stupid. Really, really stupid. You're stupid. Really, really stupid.
I don't care if you think I'm Satan reincarnated.
No words for that. No words for that. Just don't have any words for that. What are you going to do? Well, you got to vote. That's what you got to do. And that's the only way to deal with it. And, you know, the deep state is extremely powerful. And I've been digging into some books about... the JFK assassination, the Bobby Kennedy assassination. Bobby Kennedy Jr. thinks that the CIA was involved in his father's his uncle's assassination, John F. Kennedy. And certainly evidence points in that direction. And his father, Robert F. Kennedy Sr., was assassinated in 1968 at the Ambassador Hotel in Los Angeles, just after he won the California Democratic primary for president. And they said he was shot by a waiter named Sirhan Sirhan. Sirhan Sirhan, according to all eyewitnesses, never got more than about 4 feet from Kennedy. Dr. Thomas Noguchi, who was the L.A. County coroner, very well thought of coroner, said that Kennedy was shot at muzzle touching, pretty much, very, very close, behind the ear, from behind. So what do you make of that? The LAPD tore down all of the door frames that photos appear to show more bullets fired than Sirhan's gun could hold. Odd stuff like that. Sirhan says he doesn't remember anything. He doesn't remember shooting him or anything. A lot of people think he was a Manchurian candidate, and what that means, he was brainwashed by whom, we don't know, to kill Kennedy, because Kennedy was a threat to the powers that be. We're talking about Robert Kennedy. Of course, John F. Kennedy was also. Well, I can go on and on with that, but we're getting close to the news coming up, and we don't want to miss that. That's because the Hill Country Patriot, as you know, is your information station. We're Bill and Allison, are we not, Allison?
Yes, we are. And coming up after the break, we're going to tell you about our summer vacation.
Our summer vacation. It was quite fascinating. We learned a whole lot about history.
Yes.
And some things that you probably don't know. We didn't know before we took this vacation. So we're going to be talking about that in the next hour. We're talking about how to keep pets safe in the heat. That's going to be coming up. And all sorts of stuff. Lab-grown meats, maybe. And we're also going to be talking about events in the Hill Country that you can't miss coming up all weekend. So stay tuned to the Bill and Allison Show. We'll be back right after the news.
Now, the first couple of Texas Radio. Here's Bill and Allison Mancaro.
Welcome back. We're Bill and Allison.
We opened the show by talking about Billy Joe Shaver. And if you don't know Billy Joe Shaver, many people say he was one of the greatest country lyricists ever.
Well, the reason we're talking about Billy Joe right now is because his birthday was this past August the 16th. Willie Nelson once said that Billy Joe Shaver is the greatest living songwriter. Over the course of his career, Billy Joe Shaver's songs were recorded by Jerry Lee Lewis, Elvis Presley, Kris Kristofferson, George Jones, and Waylon Jennings, just to name a few. In 2006, Billy Joe Shaver was inducted into the Texas Country Music Hall of Fame. He was born in Corsicana.
You know, he was the spiritual advisor to Kinky Friedman when Kinky ran for governor of Texas. Did you know that, Allison?
I think I knew, but I'd forgotten.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, okay, speaking of whom, this next song that
Kinky Friedman, who we're speaking of, right? Or yeah. Billy Joe Shaver.
Oh, well, both, I guess. Okay. Right. Well, actually, it's fitting that it's both.
Yeah, but because don't give it away. Kinky doesn't want it given away. I don't know if you knew that. We haven't discussed this before, but when Kinky was on our show, he played this song, and I started to say who and what it was about, and he said, no. Just wait till the end of the song. The end of the song is the kicker.
Oh, so I shouldn't
no.
introduce it the way I was going to?
No. The end of the show, or the end of the song is the kicker. That's where Kinky wants it.
Okay. Well, this is a song by Kinky Friedman.
And it's particularly appropriate today to what we've been talking about. That's all I'll say.
Following a rusty railroad track, carrying his clothes in a paper sack, just another broken heart to fix, said the poet of Motel 6. Following the rusty railroad track, give you the shirt right off his back, just another memory to mend, says the poet to his long lost friend. Some folks may not know it, but there goes the poet who played the guitar with only three fingers, but his words and his music and his memory lingered. He'd stay up all night, he would drink and he would fight. How about every song he'd write was the story of our lives. Some folks may not know it, but there goes the poet who played and sang and loved with all his mighty heart, till it just broke apart. And may you lay in a field of stars, serenaded by a million guitars, playing songs of your honky-tonk youth, playing songs of your beautiful truth. Following the rusty railroad track, carrying his clothes in a paper sack, just another broken heart to fix, said the poet of Motel 6. Following the rusty railroad track, give you the shirt right off his back, just another memory to mend, says the poet to his long lost friend. And then one uncloudy day, God's voice was heard across the heavens, and this is what he said. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Billy Joe Shaver.
Well, that was the poet of Motel 6, written and performed by our own Hill Country treasure, Kinky Friedman. And Kinky has a bumper sticker on his truck that says, "Live Forever, Billy Joe Shaver," which was, that was one of Billy Joe's biggest hits.
Yeah. Billy Joe Shaver, may you rest in peace.
Smile though your heart is aching.
Coming up after this brief break, we're going to be talking about our summer vacation.
And part of it was spent with the guys you're
singing,
hearing singing right now.
That's right. Just 1 week ago today, we spent pretty much the entire day with them.
The Jive Aces. So look them up, jiveaces.org or YouTube. Just go to search for Jive Aces. We'll be back after a real short break.
Come shining through for you. light up your face with gladness.
Welcome back. We're Bill and Allison, Hill Country Patriot. First couple of TexasRadio.com, where you can hear our replays any old time. I grew up from young childhood singing, but I'm not going to sing it to you because I cannot sing.
Yes, you can.
I'm so bad, I don't even sing in the shower anymore. But what I grew up singing was, "Oh, they built the ship to sail the ocean blue." And I asked Bill, he was not familiar with this. Apparently it's a girl thing. "Oh, they built the ship to sail the ocean blue. It was sad when the great ship went down to the bottom of the sea. Husbands and wives, little children lost their lives." And again, repeat. "It was sad when the great ship went down to the bottom of the sea." We sang it at camp and in Girl Scouts. It was written about the sinking of the Titanic on April 15th, 1912, which is ironically the same year the Girl Scouts were founded, and we sang it in Girl Scouts. Anyway, it is rather odd now as an adult looking back that we sang such a peppy song about a disaster that killed over 1,500 people.
Same reason we name airports after people who died in plane crashes.
Well, there you go. Called Unsinkable, the Titanic has captured our imaginations. 18 movies have been produced about the sinking of the Titanic, including the first one, and this is pretty amazing. The first one was released 29 days after the sinking.
Really?
It was co-written by and starred a survivor. The Titanic was on its maiden voyage. It was called Unsinkable, but it hit an iceberg and sank. I said 18 movies have been produced. Also, 24 documentaries have been produced. Probably the most well-known movie was James Cameron's 1997 Titanic, one of the most expensive movies ever made at a cost of $200 million, more than the actual ship Titanic cost. It won 11 Academy Awards. Bill and I just got back from our summer vacation. We're still recuperating.
Yeah, I still have jet lag.
I know. Where we were at four important sites in the short life of the Titanic. We visited, not in this order, but we visited Belfast, Northern Ireland, where the Titanic was built, Southampton, England, where the Titanic sailed from, and Cork, Ireland, where the Titanic stopped to pick up additional passengers. The fourth site I will mention later. The implosion of the submersible Titan recently on its way to the bottom of the ocean to show paying customers. The wreck of the Titanic has refreshed the wreck of the Titanic in people's memories. And it was not until 1985. Remember, it sunk in 1912, and the remains were not found until 1985.
Yeah, they thought it had gone down and was in one piece. They've always thought that, and then they discovered in 85 Robert Ballard, if I'm right.
Yes, Robert Ballard.
Discovered that it was broken in half.
The SS Californian was a British steamship thought to have been the only ship to see the Titanic, or at least her distress call rockets, during the sinking. But despite being the closest ship in the area, the crew took no action to assist. There was a United States Senate inquiry into the wreck, and also the British Wreck Commissioner's inquiry into the sinking. Both concluded that the Californian could have saved many or all of the lives that were lost. Hmm. And again, reminder, 1,500 people.
Was there any defense, any explanation as to why they didn't do anything?
No. Hmm. No. The U.S. Senate inquiry was particularly critical of the ship's captain, the Californian, calling his inaction during the disaster reprehensible.
Yeah, I guess.
And despite no formal charges were ever brought against the captain and his crew for their inaction, survivors instead were rescued by the RMS Carpathia. And you know what? Titanic was also an RMS. And mm-hmm. you know, actually, I probably knew that, but it was we were reminded. Mm-hmm. That's a Royal Mail ship.
Mm-hmm.
They were taking mail.
Very important role because you have the mail, mm-hmm. carrying the mail.
And the Californian was later sunk in November of 1915 near Greece during World War I. But the sinking of the Titanic on April 15th resulted in an inquiry by the British Wreck Commission. It was held in London from May 2nd to July 3rd, 1912. The hearings took place mainly in London at the Scottish Drill Hall. That was the fourth Titanic site that we were close to.
Mm-hmm.
We our hotel, when we stayed in London after a cruise, we stayed at a hotel that was less than a mile from that mm-hmm. Meeting hall. Unfortunately, it was demolished in 1985, so there was nothing there for us to see.
So we went to four of the five Titanic sites. Mm-hmm. Where it was built, where it was launched from, Southampton, where it stopped to pick up passengers, and excuse me, we were right near the area where the building was for the inquest. We did not get to the fifth Titanic site, which is where it's lying at the bottom of the ocean. But I a little surprise for you, Allison. I have made arrangements. I have made arrangements with a company called Ocean Gate. They have a new submersible. It is actually experimental a little bit, but I'm sure it'll work. The hull is made of whipped cream. And their theory is, and they said that they've tested it, and of course, you know, nobody would lie about this, that when whipped cream is exposed to salt water at the depth of the at extreme depths, it turns into a real impenetrable hull. So we're scheduled for that.
Okay. All right. Anyway, the investigation in London was 42 days, and they interviewed the various councils and assessors and experts in marine law and shipping architecture, questioned White Star Line officials, which was the owner of the Titanic, and government officials, surviving passengers and crew, and those who aided the rescue efforts. Organizations represented by legal counsels included shipping unions and government organizations.
Yeah, they called everybody they could think
exactly.
Of. Yeah.
Nearly 100 witnesses testified, answering more than 25,000
One of the interesting
questions.
Things about the inquest, and we went to a multimedia presentation in Southampton at the City Museum there, but really very, very well done.
Exactly.
And it showed highlights of the inquest. And one of the many things we learned was that the Titanic was sending out radio distress calls, and there was a ship, I don't know, was it Carpathia or another ship, that was close enough to pick those up, but their radio operator had gone to bed, and so they, you know, didn't hear it. And what came out of that inquest was that they ordered that all ships have two radio men, so that always monitoring radio calls. I learned, that's one thing I learned from the, mm-hmm. from the inquest.
Mm-hmm. And that was the most interesting thing that we saw, and that was at a museum in Southampton.
Yeah.
The audio, of not actual audio, it was a recreation.
It was a multimedia presentation.
Yeah. But the final report was published in 1912. Its recommendations, along with the earlier U.S. Senate inquiry that had taken place in the month after the sinking, led to changes in safety practices following the disaster.
Oh, absolutely. And, oh, well, do you know about the binoculars?
Yeah.
They called a witness who was on the Titanic, one of the watchmen. I don't know what his official title is, but he, you know, stands on the ship's bow and looks for icebergs, basically. Well, he had requested binoculars, and they denied his request. The White Star Line denied his request, and he was asked, if you had binoculars, could you have seen the iceberg sooner? And he said, absolutely, could have seen it much sooner. But he said, I had to stand there. It was very dark. All I could make out were shapes because I didn't have binoculars. And once I saw the shape coming, it was too late to avoid the crash.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's very interesting stuff, Allison.
Well, and there are two bizarre works of fiction.
Oh, this is wild. This is it.
Yeah.
If you, you know, yeah. if you're wondering why we're talking about so much about the Titanic, number one, we were there. But number two, at those various places, but number two, you won't believe this. Go ahead, Allison.
Okay, there are two bizarre works of fiction that seem to foretell the sinking of the Titanic. The first was written in 1886. Keep in mind that the Titanic went down in 1912. So in 1886, W.T. Stead, a prominent spiritualist. Do you want to explain to people what a spiritualist is?
Somebody who thinks they can communicate with the dead.
Yeah, okay. Anyway, he was a prominent spiritualist and investigative journalist, wrote how the mail steamer went down in mid-Atlantic by a survivor. He tells the story of an unnamed ocean liner that sinks in the Atlantic. In the story, the protagonist, a sailor named Thompson, who grows concerned over the lifeboat shortage on deck.
Which is exactly what the Titanic had, a lifeboat.
Exactly, shortage. Exactly. There weren't enough lifeboats for all the passengers. Sure enough, the liner collides with a small sailing ship.
Now, this is in the novel.
This is in the novel.
Written decades before the...
Yes.
Okay, before the Titanic sank.
Yes. As the ocean liner sinks, women and children are given priority seating on the lifeboats, but chaos reigns, and only 200 passengers and crew members of the original 700 people on board survive the disaster. Thompson himself survives when a lifeboat circles back around and pulls him from the water. Stead continues the piece with a word of advice. This is exactly what might take place and will take place if the liners are sent to sea short of lifeboats. And here's a twist of fate. Stead died on the Atlantic.
On the what?
On the Titanic. Wow. He died on the Titanic.
Wow.
The second prophetic work is The Wreck of the Titan, or Futility, by Morgan Robertson. This book had even more startling similarities to the sinking of the Titanic. It was written in 1898. Remember, the Titanic sank in 1912. And don't forget the submersible that imploded on the way to the Titanic on the ocean's floor was named the Titan. The story follows the fictional ocean liner Titan, which ultimately hits an iceberg in the North Atlantic and sinks. And the name and circumstances of the plot aren't the only details that fit real-life disaster. Like the Titanic, the fictional Titan was described as the largest ship afloat at the time. In fact, the sizes and lengths of the ships, are quite close, as well as the speed at which they crash into the iceberg. Both liners have a dangerous shortage of lifeboats.
So this is all in the fictional one written, again, decades before the actual Titanic.
Exactly, exactly. And like the Titanic, the Titan was dubbed unsinkable and proceeded to sink on a cold April night.
April? He actually predicted it would come down, do it on an April? In his novel, he said the ship went down in April?
Yes, and the Titanic was sunk
in April.
April.
Yeah. Wow.
In the story, the fictional Titan's sinking resulted in the deaths of all 2,500 people on board, except for 13. On the Titanic, over 1,500 people died, while 705 survivors made it out. After the sinking of the Titanic, the book was reissued, and Robertson was labeled a clairvoyant. He said he simply was knowledgeable about maritime operations, saying, "I know what I'm writing about, that's all."
Mm-hmm. Wow. That is amazing. That two novels were written decades before the Titanic went down, and it basically predicted so many points of the actual sinking of the Titanic. Yeah, that is wild stuff. Mm-hmm. Wild stuff.
Well, also on the same vacation, we were in the port for Cork, Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
And
which is Cove, but it's, believe it or not, spelled C-O-B as in boy, H. And before we got there, how do you pronounce C-O-B-H? And our taxi driver said it's Cove, like C-O-V-E.
Well,
it's Gaelic, or yeah, they call it Irish.
Yeah, I was going to say, what we learned is that in Ireland, everything you see is written in the top line is Gaelic, or Irish, as they generally call it, and the second line is English. So C-O-B-H is Gaelic, and C-O-V-E is English.
Mm-hmm.
But that was the port that took on passengers for the Titanic after it sailed from Southampton, mm-hmm. England.
And you remember the story, we were told that a priest got on, and he was a local parish priest, and he got on to minister to some of his parishioners that are on the Titanic. So he got on with them, and he ministered to them, and he wanted to stay on the ship. But previously he had talked to his bishop, and the bishop said, you can get on the ship while it's docked, taking on passengers, and minister your people. But he said, you've got work to do in Cork, in Cove, so I don't want you on that ship. And so he didn't stay on the ship.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Thank you. I'm sure he was grateful to the bishop, you know.
But at that same port where we were, we saw the final resting place of the Lusitania.
Yeah, this is weird. Just a few miles from where the Titanic picked up its last passengers and set out on its doomed voyage, just a few miles from that spot is where the Lusitania was sunk by a German U-boat in mm-hmm. World War I.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
Not just a few miles.
Yeah, and it's just off the coast mm-hmm. of Ireland.
It's in the middle of they have a little museum and in honor of the Lusitania out in the middle of nowhere, and they have a some artifacts from the Lusitania. We were the only ones there to show you how small it is. They have some artifacts from the Lusitania that they found, and fellow who runs the museum the museum itself is extremely small, and he's has some few brochures and booklets and things for sale. And I talked to him, and I know he was speaking English, but he had such a thick Irish brogue, I could only understand about one every five words. And our driver told us that he said that guy has never been out of the county. He knows every blade of grass and every person in his county. But that's all his experiences have been. And so his speech is so, what's the word for it, insular or inbred or however.
Local.
Local. So local that it's such a thick Irish brogue, barely understand it. But one thing we learned about the Lusitania is that it's privately owned. Now, I didn't know you could own a shipwreck.
Well, it was owned by Cunard, and apparently they sold the rights.
Sold mm-hmm. the ship.
I mean, they owned it, so they could do whatever they want with it.
Yeah, so they sold it to a man for a dollar, and he wanted to make sure it was protected, and people didn't come and try to take stuff from it, and so he protected it. And when he died, he willed the ownership of the Lusitania to the Lusitania Museum and Heritage Site. So it's now basically a cemetery, mm-hmm. Right now, and they don't allow people down there.
Yeah, and the Germans thought that it was carrying munitions, which apparently was carrying some, but it was still a passenger ship. But that's why the Germans sank it. But before the sailing from the United States, the Germans posted a notice in newspapers all over the United States, warning people. Notice: travelers intending to embark on the Atlantic voyage are reminded that a state of war exists between Germany and her allies and Great Britain and her allies, that the zone of war includes the waters adjacent to the British Isles, that in accordance with formal notice given by the Imperial German government, vessels flying the flag of Great Britain or any of her allies are liable to destruction in those waters, and that travelers sailing in the war zone on the ships of Great Britain or her allies do so at their own risk. And this display ad was posted by the Imperial German Embassy, Washington, D.C., April 22nd, 1915. And this was posted next to an ad for the Lusitania's return voyage.
Who would get on a ship?
Really?
You see that in the newspaper. But a bunch of people did. I don't know what the passenger complement was of the Lusitania. But a bunch of people did. Well, that's our a little bit about our summer vacation. And Allison came back with a cold, I guess. But it's nothing major. But if you hear any coughing in the background, that's pretty much what it is.
Or if I sound a bit froggy.
Froggy, exactly. Well, we've done the Titanic, done the Lusitania. We still have a lot more to talk about, but we'll save that for another time, another show. And we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, tell you about what could happen if you're out and you come home. We'll tell you about what happened to a man who went through a very bizarre experience, and it could happen to you. We'll be right back on Bill and Allison Show.
Welcome back. We're Bill and Allison.
We are Bill and Allison on your Hill Country Patriot, your information station. No, I just heard that it's going to be 105 in Junction today.
Yeah.
And 101 in Harper. So, our listeners in Junction, if you want to cool off, go to Harper. Right?
And we just came from a country that where we were wearing sweaters and jackets.
Yeah, that's right. England. We were in jolly old England. Well, an Atlanta suburban homeowner, Decatur, Georgia, stopped by to check on his rental property. A tenant had moved out, so he had come to see what fix-up needed to be done. And he pulled into the driveway of his house, the rental house, and he suddenly encountered a stranger waving a gun in his face. He said, "I just jumped the fence and ran. I didn't know what else to do." So Tim Arco is the landlord. He said, "I didn't walk in on family eating dinner. I walked in on weapons, a prostitute, a bunch of dogs in the back, and my fence broken down." So he called, as you would, 911, and say that there's squatters in my rental house. Well, he was arrested and taken into custody.
Wow.
Because the squatters told the police that I was a home invader and that it was their home.
Oh.
So he said, "I ended up being arrested and detained. Okay, that was months ago, and he's been trying to evict the squatters in court. In Georgia, apparently, you can't just call the police and prove that you're the homeowner and kick them out. So 6 months later, they're still living in the guy's house.
Wow.
And get this. Two people have died there from drug overdoses in the past 6 months. Code enforcement has cited and is going to fine
him,
the homeowner, for not properly maintaining the house that he legally can't get into.
Whoa.
And finally, after lengthy court delays, paying lawyers, gobs of money, an eviction order was finally signed, but he's still waiting for marshals to conduct the eviction. He's hoping for eviction next month.
Wow.
Isn't that outrageous?
Absolutely.
But the laws about squatters vary from state to state, and Georgia apparently is one of them that have very lenient laws that people can squat. And we know a fellow who's a major landlord. And he's from Massachusetts, but he won't buy any rental property in Massachusetts because of that.
Mm-hmm.
Because squatters can just, you know, if you have a vacant house, they can just break in, and it takes months and months and months
to
get them out.
Yeah, he told us that the squatters have the rights, and you, the homeowner, do not.
Yeah, so he won't, and that's Massachusetts. A lot of liberal states do that. You know? Well, you may be familiar or may not be familiar with the presidential candidate, Vivek Ramaswamy. And actually, I just read yesterday that he is on a national poll pulled ahead of Ron DeSantis. He's now in number two behind Trump. Trump has an overwhelming lead, but Vivek Ramaswamy is now in the number two spot. And here's Alice and I found this audio where Ramaswamy was at the Iowa State Fair, and a self-described pansexual reporter, a female, she wouldn't say she was, but she was, tried to bait Vivek Ramaswamy. And instead, he delivered a master class on how to instantly turn the tables on somebody who's trying to bait you.
I'm personally a pansexual, so I was okay. just wondering what your views on same-sex couples were.
I don't have a negative view of same-sex couples, but I do have a negative view of a tyranny of the minority. So I think that in the name of protecting against a tyranny of the majority, and there are times in this country's history where we have had a tyranny of the majority, we have now, in the name of protecting against tyranny of the majority, created a new tyranny of the minority. And I think that that's wrong. I don't think that somebody who's religious should be forced to officiate a wedding that they disagree with. I don't think somebody who is a woman who's worked really hard for her achievements should be forced to compete against a biological man in a swim competition. I don't think that somebody who's a woman that respects her bodily autonomy and dignity should be forced to change clothes in a locker room with a man. That's not freedom, that's oppression. And so I believe that we live in a country where free adults should be free to dress how they want, behave how they want, and that's fine. But you don't oppress, you don't become oppressive by foisting that on others. And that especially includes kids, because kids aren't the same as adults. And so I think adults are free to make whatever choices they want, but do not foist that ideology onto children before children are in a position as adults to make decisions for themselves. And so I think a lot of the frustration in the country, and if I'm being really honest, that I also share, comes from that new culture of oppression where saying those things can actually get somebody punished.
Well, there's a story that I just read yesterday about a weightlifter, a quote-unquote female weightlifter, who bested the real women by something like 440 pounds.
A man calling himself a woman.
Yeah, exactly.
Entered women's weightlifting contest.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
crazy.
Yeah, absolutely. Exactly. 440 pounds.
Crazy, crazy. Well, as I've said before, we live in a age of fake genders and fake news and fake meat, and probably add to that list. You were listening. That, by the way, that cut was from Vivek Ramaswamy, who's running for president of the United States, and he, according to national polls, I mentioned his number two spot, but he gave a master class on how to instantly turn the tables on somebody who's trying to you know, get you. Well, Vivek Ramaswamy is somebody I respect. I don't respect this guy at all. He's a New York Democrat state representative, not a congressman, but a state representative. His name is Charles Barron. Charles Barron, B-A-R-R-O-N. And Alice and I found this clip. Imagine a white person saying what, Charles Barron is black, but imagine a white person saying this about black people. Here's what New York State Representative Charles Barron recently said.
I have the distinct honor to be able to come before you and say I actually lost white population in my community. I lost them. They left. I didn't ask them why. They left. So if you see one or two or three or four or five whites in my neighborhood, they're passing through. So, but that's on a serious note. We got 13,000 black elected officials in this country. We've had mayors, we've had governors, we have city council members. We need to get radical.
All right. Now, we're always told, black people cannot be racist. What do you call that?
Mm-hmm.
What do you call that? Imagine if Donald Trump had said that about black people, or any white politician.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Well, anyway, that was Charles Barron, who's a Democrat state representative in New York, and he's somebody that they elect. How about that? Well, we're not going to talk anymore about our vacation. I think that's we might next week. We got a few other things. I see you got a strange smile on your face, Allison. Why?
I just want to say cheers to everyone who does their own research. In the age of information, ignorance is a choice.
That is very true. Well, this is the these are the dog days of summer. So I want to talk about that a little bit. You know, they're commonly referred to as the dog days, and the time of year when Sirius, which is the dog star, rises with the morning sun. And if you get up early enough in the nice, cool part of the day, you'll see Sirius. A dog's body temperature is higher than a human's, about 101.5 degrees on average. So the hot weather affects more. Dogs often loll in the shade during hot weather, and they need more hydration. That should be obvious. If you're a dog owner, pet owner, if you have farm animals, you would know that. Dogs' other sensory inputs are different as well. A dog's sense of smell is thousands of times stronger than a human's, has millions more scent receptors, so that this is for tracking, drug detection. There are dogs that sniff out diseases. There are therapy dogs for people with diabetes and with
epilepsy.
Thank you. I couldn't think of the word. The dog can sense when an epileptic attack is coming and warns the person so they can take preventive action. Dog's hearing is also impressive. Their outer ears have positioning muscles to magnify sound. You know, you see a dog perk up its ears. We can't do that. But they also hear sounds human cannot, as we know. I didn't know this, but the Beatles reportedly used a frequency only dogs can hear in their song A Day in the Life.
Really?
So why don't you get that song, play it, and see if your dog reacts. Dogs love music, by the way. What does Kinky say about, we're talking a lot about Kinky today. Well, we know he's listening. Hey, Kinky. What did he say about judging a person?
He judges people by how they treat, like, waiters and...
I thought it was how they treat their pets.
And animals.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, insulting a server is about as low as you can get because they can't talk back to you.
Right.
It's a horrible thing. One common misconception about dogs is that they're colorblind. They are not colorblind. They see most of the same colors we do. They do have problems between reds and with reds and things like that.
But, so do you.
Yeah, I know. Well, that's on part dog.
Apparently.
Most dog researchers believe dogs spinning around before sleeping or doing their business helps a dog orient an internal compass with the Earth's magnetic field.
Wow.
Most dog researchers think that. And it gives them hypersensitivity, like many animals have, to earthquakes or weather patterns. I mean, you see birds flying, to get away from bad weather, that kind of thing. So as total brain power, dogs are about on a par with a two-year-old child. Dogs can count. They can understand more than 150 words, even trick people or other dogs to get treats. Of course, the intelligence is based on breeds. Since we're having such hot weather, here's some tips. You may know most of these, but maybe some you don't. Never leave your pets in a parked car, not even for a minute. Not even with the car running and the air conditioner on. On a warm day, temperatures inside a vehicle can rise rapidly to dangerous levels. On what I would call a cool day, compared to what we're having, on an 85-degree day, the temperature inside a car with the windows open slightly can reach 102 degrees within 10 minutes. After half an hour, the temperature will be 120 degrees. And with the weather we're having, it's going to be a lot higher. So your pet might suffer irreversible.
And a lot faster.
And faster. Your pet might suffer irreversible organ damage or die. Taking a dog's temperature will quickly tell you if there's a serious problem. Temperature should not be over 104. If your dog's temperature does go that high or higher, take them to the vet immediately. No exercise on hot days. Early morning, if it's cool, that's fine. But asphalt gets very hot. It can burn your pet's paws. Walk your dog on the grass if possible. Always carry water with you to keep your dog from dehydrating. Because dogs sweat primarily through their feet, and fans don't help them. They don't cool off with fans. Anytime your pet is outside, make sure they have protection from heat and sun and plenty of fresh, cold water. In heat waves, add ice to the water. Tree shades, tarps are ideal because they don't obstruct airflow. A doghouse does not provide relief from the heat. In fact, it makes it worse.
I would say it traps heat in.
It traps heat in. Make some do-it-yourself popsicles for dogs. Yeah, just water, not flavorings. Always provide water whether your pets are inside or out.
And ice cubes. Dogs like to eat ice
cubes. They love ice cubes, yeah. You can get a body wrap at a pet store, a vest or a mat. Soak them in cool water. They'll stay cool for up to 3 days. Signs of heat stroke in an animal: heavy panting, glazed eyes, rapid heartbeat, difficulty breathing, excessive thirst, lethargy, fever, dizziness, lack of coordination, profuse salivation, vomiting, a deep red or purple tongue, seizure, and unconsciousness. So if you see anything like that, rush your dog to the vet. Some breeds of dogs with short muzzles will have a much harder time breathing in extreme heat. And if you got a pet that is suffering from heat stroke, as I said, take them to the vet. But also always have your pet in the shade or an air-conditioned area. Apply ice packs or cold towels to their head, neck, and chest, or run cool, not cold water, over them. Let them drink small amounts of cool water or lick ice cubes and take them, again, directly to a veterinarian. So some of the ways to protect your pet in this heat wave we're facing. We're Bill and Allison. We're on every Saturday from 8 to 10. Right here on the Hill Country Patriot, which is your information station for the Texas Hill Country.
Or you can hear us at firstcoupleoftexasradio.com.
firstcoupleoftexasradio.com. See you next week.